Well, hello, oddballs. It's your host, Bobby, and this is Oddities on Elm Street. Welcome back, and thank you so much for joining me today for episode 53. Unfortunately, I'm having to record this episode without Lexi. There's just been a lot going on. She is planning a wedding. She's working a lot. She's a busy gal. So it'll just be me and you today. I'm going to be covering another local case to me. So this may not be one that everyone is familiar with. But before we do that, I'm going to shout out some of our lovely patrons first. So a big welcome and thank you so much to our newest patrons, Ellen, Liv, and Hawthorne. You guys are absolutely amazing. We're so thankful for your support. And if you'd like to support the show and get some exclusive content from us, make sure to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/oddities on Elm Street. Again, thank you so much, Ellen, Liv, and Hawthorne. You guys are amazing. So today, I'm going to be taking you to a place called Alpine Manor. Before it was forced to close down in 1990, Alpine Manor was a residential facility for the elderly. They were equipped with a team of professional nurses trained to work with residents who suffered from Alzheimer's or dementia, specifically, but they also worked with those with disabilities or just anyone in general who needed a high level of dedicated care in their day-to-day lives. In July of 1985, the Chambers family admitted their 58-year-old mother, Marguerite Chambers, to the Alpine Manor Nursing Home in Walker, Michigan. This, like it is for many families, was a very difficult decision for them to make, but they believed that the staff at the manor would be more help to them than they could be at the time. They were hoping it would be a safe place for Marguerite to live out the final years of her life, but while visiting her mother one day, Jan Hunderman noticed that there was dirt on her mother's face. And when she approached her mother with a wet washcloth to help clean her, Marguerite appeared frightened. Jan confronted the nursing home staff about this, asking why her mother was so upset, but she didn't really ever get any answers. Less than 2 years after she was entered into the facility, Marguerite passed away in January of 1987. But it wouldn't be until the fall of the following year that they would eventually learn what had caused her death. So let's just take it back a little bit. It's 1986, and 24-year-old Catherine Wood and 23-year-old Gwendolyn Graham meet each other for the first time at the Alpine Manor Nursing Home. The two quickly became friends and then lovers. Their co-workers at the manor described their relationship as intense. They said the couple would play odd pranks together, such as lying under a patient's bed and grabbing other nurses' ankles. Another co-worker recalled a fight between the two of them in which Gwendolyn dragged Catherine into a bedroom by her hair. I don't really understand what goes through a person's mind where they just wake up one morning and think, this sounds like a good idea, but the two of them together wanted to play a game. They came up with the idea to spell the word murder out, using the first initial of the residents' names that were in their care. Their first victim, Marguerite Chambers. So the thing is, with this sick and twisted game, the facility had a book where they kept records of which patients were either discharged from the hospital or had passed away while they were in the hospital's care. They wanted to kill their patients in order to make the book spell out the word murder. I hope what I'm saying is making sense. The way that they would do this is by using a washcloth to smother the victims, and most of them were too incapacitated to fight back. Because at first there was no suspicion of anything sinister going on, the patients were assumed to have died of natural causes, and therefore, it didn't seem like an autopsy was necessary. And over the next few months, Gwendolyn and Catherine would go on to murder 4 more patients. This little game to spell out the word murder with their victims' initials was becoming increasingly difficult as time went on. So they then began counting each murder as a day, as in the phrase, "I will love you forever and a day." For example, Catherine had written Gwendolyn a poem that said, "You'll be mine forever in 5 days," because they had 5 victims. Their first victim, Marguerite Chambers, had actually been suffocated twice. According to a testimony given by Catherine herself, Gwendolyn placed a washcloth underneath her chin to hold her mouth closed while she used her hand to pinch her nose. And in doing this, Gwen thought that she had killed Marguerite. But upon returning an hour later, Gwen found that Marguerite was still breathing. A few days later, Gwen went back to Marguerite's room and finished the job, which makes sense if you remember back to what Marguerite's daughter, Jan, recalled before her mother's death, how Marguerite suddenly became terrified when she brought the washcloth out to clean her face. Gwendolyn and Catherine's 5 victims included 60-year-old Marguerite Chambers, 79-year-old Mae Mason, 98-year-old Edith Cook, 95-year-old Myrtle Luce, and 74-year-old Belle Burkhard. All 5 of the victims suffered from either Alzheimer's or dementia. The investigation began in 1988 after Catherine's ex-husband went to the police. Catherine had confided in her ex-husband about the murders, so she was brought in for questioning at the Walker Police Department, and she spilled, but did everything in her power to portray Gwendolyn as the mastermind and the one who committed the murders with her own hands. According to Catherine, she was only the lookout. So by the time police are becoming aware of this situation, Catherine and Gwendolyn are no longer together. The couple had broken up after Gwendolyn began dating a new coworker and moved to Texas with her. Walker detectives then flew out to Texas to interview Gwendolyn about the allegations, and she claimed that Catherine was making everything up because she was mad about the breakup. She actually agreed to take a polygraph test, but the result was inconclusive, so authorities had to release her from questioning. Back in Michigan, Catherine had also agreed to take a polygraph test, still sticking to her story about not being directly involved with the actual murder process. Catherine failed the test, but offered no explanation of why. But a few days later, Catherine called detectives telling them that she wanted to tell them the truth about what really happened. This time, when she was brought into the interview room, Catherine admitted that she played a much bigger part in the murders than she had previously claimed. She told about the 5 murders that they had committed together and told detectives about their plan to select their victims based on the first letters of their names in order to spell out the word murder. When asked about their motive, she said they did it so they would have something that would bind them together forever. Investigators felt that they had enough ground to exhume 2 of the nursing home victims who had not been cremated. But unfortunately, the medical examination was unable to reveal whether they had died from natural causes or from homicide, which isn't unusual in this case because they were smothered to death. They did, however, have enough evidence based on Catherine's confession to make an arrest, so both Catherine and Gwendolyn were arrested on December 4th and December 5th of 1988. Catherine was only charged with 2 counts of open murder, and Gwendolyn was being charged with 5 counts of murder. In exchange for a plea deal to lessen her sentence, Catherine agreed to testify against Gwendolyn. Not only was Catherine called to testify against Gwendolyn, but Gwendolyn's new girlfriend also took the stand. And it was her testimony that ultimately swayed the jury, because Gwendolyn had told her that she was responsible for the 5 murders. I've always wondered what type of people would hear someone say something like that and just continue on with their relationship, like, "Oh, okay, no big deal." I really just don't get it. On November 3rd, 1989, Gwendolyn Graham was found guilty of 5 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of conspiracy to commit murder, and she was sentenced to life in prison, where she still remains to this day. Catherine Wood was found guilty of 1 count of second-degree murder and 1 count of conspiracy to commit murder, and was sentenced to 20 to 40 years in prison, and was actually released from prison on January 16th of 2020, and has since moved to South Carolina. There is a book about this case called Forever in 5 Days that definitely tells a different story than what was given to police and told in court by Catherine. The author went around and interviewed the families of Catherine and Gwendolyn, and according to people that knew Catherine, they said that she was a pathological liar. In the book, the author shares evidence that suggests that Catherine had actually planned the first murder herself after she had found Gwendolyn with another woman. And the only reason she involved Gwendolyn in this plan was as an insurance policy to keep her from ever leaving. Obviously, that did not work. There was also some psychological testing that Gwendolyn had undergone that revealed that she was an easy target to manipulate, and that she lacked the sophistication that would be required to plan the murders, let alone defend herself in trial. The book also reveals testimony from 2 of Catherine's inmates that gives another version of events. According to these inmates, Catherine admitted to them that she had framed Gwendolyn for the murders and wanted to ensure that she would be put away for the rest of her life as revenge for leaving her for another woman. So it is very interesting to hear a different perspective about this case than what we typically see just on the surface. Several of the victims' families sued the owners of Alpine Manor for hiring dangerous employees, and Alpine Manor has since gone out of business. The building is still being used as a nursing home, and it's now called Sanctuary at St. Mary's. Well, that is all I have for you guys today. I hope you enjoyed listening to our little local case. I hope you all have a lovely week, and just remember to always keep it spooky.